Okay, we got Zoom to work, I think. So that's a step in the right direction. We're going to start doing the Book of Ezra, and we're not going to get anywhere near finishing it over the summer. The Book of Ezra has around 12 chapters. We're doing an introduction this week. Next week is Shiva Subratama's. 3 weeks of that is Tisha B'Av, and then we have one more week before the end of the summer. So if we make it through three chapters, I will consider it a success.
So why do we take it?
There was interest in doing Ezra. I happen to support the idea of doing Ezra. I think it's a nice idea. Among the reasons I'm excited about Ezra is because of today's shiur. This is a topic that's extremely important that I've never had an opportunity to talk about, and that is the chronology of the Book of Ezra. Now, we've focused in the what we call Neviim Rishonim. The Neviim Rishonim are the books of Yehoshua, Shoftim, Shmuel, and Malachim. If a person knows the Chumash and Neviim Rishonim, you know the entire Jewish history from the creation of the universe through to the destruction of the first temple. That's a big deal. Right. Logically, what comes next, actually, so Neviim Achronim are not historical books by and large. You're talking about Yeshaya, you're talking about Yirmiyah, you're talking about Yechezkel. These are prophecies, these aren't stories. And similarly, the Treyasar, the 12 other called minor prophets, are also, yes, they are in a context, a historical context, but it's not really. The history books. The history books that come over are afterwards are Daniel, Ezra, and Nehemiah. Daniel, which is really a book which is focusing on the Babylonian exile, and then Ezra and Nehemiah, which focus on the end of the Babylonian exile, which is by then the Persian exile, and the fact that they are going to be building the building of the second temple. Right? So in terms of chronologically, this is the end of it. So this is the way we're going to go. This chronology is extremely important. As you'll see, it might have huge ramifications to us today, trying to nail down this chronology. Now, the simple understanding that we all grow up with, and that is produced here in the first few sources, is there is a basic idea of the fact that the first temple lasted 410 years. Then there was an exile of how long? 70 years. And then the second temple lasted 420 years. That's our assumption. Now, I don't want to overwhelm you with math, but that's not going to stop me from doing it anyhow. But take a peek at the last sheet. There is a chart. And with the chronology here of Seder Olam, you get a pretty good idea of how we end up in the year 5782. And I'm just going to go through it outside. And the question is, how do I know this year is the year 5782? Very interesting. I'll just tell you a quick funny story. I've probably told it before, that there was a point in my career. I was a part of the administration of Yeshiva University, and during that point, I was actually listed as Jewish Studies. Meaning that if someone called the operator at YU and said, "I have a Jewish question," it came to me. Right? That's
Any
a
Jewish questions?
any Jewish question. You called the YU operator, it came to me. At the time, I also had a wonderful alias in terms of my emails. I was jewstuds@yu.edu. Right? I probably could have made money at JDate or something with that. So at one point in the, I can tell you pretty much exactly when this happened, about 22 years ago plus change, Fox News Network is doing a story on Y2K. And they wanted to talk about the idea, they explained that Y2K is a secular type of idea. It doesn't really affect anybody else. And in fact, the Chinese have their own calendar, and the Muslims have their own calendar, and the Jews have their own calendar,
And that
etc.
was the inspiration for Umberto Eco's second novel, because it would, he said it in the year 1000.
So,
The same idea, but
right. So what they were doing is they had somebody doing background research trying to understand the other calendars. So they had a question about the Jewish calendar. So they called Yeshiva University and they said, we have a Jewish question. And the question, of course, got forwarded to me. That's how it would work, right? So then they asked me, what year are you in now? It was 5760. And they said, who came up with the calendar? Right? Where did it come from? So the truth of the matter is, here's how it works. I'm going to now walk you through the entire Jewish history from the creation of the universe to today, pretty much. Right? See this, right? This is a pretty easy one, right? Let's start with this. Avraham Avinu was born in the year
1948,
right? Yitzhak was born in the year. Well, Avraham was how old when Yitzhak was born? 100. So yeah, this math isn't hard. Right? I'm not giving you hard, right? Therefore, he was born in the year 2048. We got out of Egypt in the year 2440. That's 400 years from the birth of Yitzhak. Right? These are all easy numbers, right? There. So we got in the year 2448. We learned not that long ago in Melachim that the first temple was built 480 years after, right? Left Egypt, right? So what year is the temple built in? We were at 2448.
We're adding 480.
Right?
2968.
Right? So then 410 years of the first temple brings up to the year. What? 3338.
3338 is what?
Destruction?
No.
Yes.
Yes.
Of the first of the system.
Right. So again, So that is the year.
Is this the chart that comes from the book Jewish History and Conflict?
Yes. Oh. As it says, right on top of it.
Oh, I didn't see that.
I don't hide my facts. Right. Turn it on the side. It's supposed to be, and it'll say exactly what page it's on. Etc. We are academically straight with this. So again, so the Beis Hamikdash.
I thought
I'd see them. Right? Yeah. Right. Oh, that's so. With 2448, we leave Egypt. Mm-hmm. Right. By 480 years later, we cross over. Right, that's 2928, 410 years after that, right, when the year 3338, we're up to?
2948 is when we cross in Israel?
What?
2948 is?
No. So again, 2448, we get out of Egypt. 2488 is when we cross it, 40 years later. Right, that's not really a relevant number. Yeah.
Okay.
Right? So the Beis Hamikdash is built by Shlomo, right, in the year 2928, right? 410 years later, it's destroyed, 3338, right? 70 years later, it's rebuilt, 3408. It's destroyed 420 years later, 3828, right? We believe that that is the year 70, approximately, the year 68, maybe, of the common era. Right, then in the year 2022, you add 1950 years to that approximately, and you end up where we are right now in 5782.
I'm sorry, add how many?
What?
Add how many?
Well, 1952 years since the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash, approximately. Right. As if it's year 70, again, you're going to be within 2-3 years. This is the entirety of Jewish history,
right?
That's it. That's all what you need to know from the time that God put Adam on this earth, right? And that's what happened before that until today. That is the complete Jewish chronology as we do it traditionally, right? And all of these numbers are based on sources, pretty primary sources. We'll get the Gemara in Yuma in number one. It says, Yiras Hashem Tosef Yomim Zeh Mikdash Rishon She'amad Arba Meyos Ve'eser Shanim. That in those 410 years, there were only 18 Kohen Gadols. That means your average Kohen Gadol lasted for 25 years or so, right? Vishnos Vishom Tiksarna Zoom Mikta Shady Shamad Arba Meos Vasam Shana Vishim Shiva Yose Meshalish Meos Kahanim. In the second base of Mikdash lasted for 420 years, there are over 300 Kohen Gadols.
So you're talking about
You're
talking about a year and 3 months.
Right. Year and change. Right, right, right. A year and 3 months, we can put you at 400. But I don't care about the Kohen Gadols. I care about the numbers 410 and 420. That's what I really was looking for this source. Right, so that's the story. And in fact, we see it elsewhere in Erechin, Bayesheni, Kamokom, Arba Meos, Fast, from 420 years. Not just the Bavli, the Yerushalmi. You think maybe the Yerushalmi knows better. They're there. But Yerushalayim also b'vinyan rishon arba meos ve'esher b'vinyan achron arba meos ve'esrim. Right. So we have here a tradition both in the Babylonian Talmud and in the Yerushalmi. Everybody agrees. First base of Mikdash 410. Second base of Mikdash 420. Where does the 70 years of Galus in between come from? The 70 years of exile. I have even more primary sources for that. Those are psukim. That's undeniable.
Let me make sure I'm understanding. We're saying that the first temple
stood for 410,
and the second stood for 420.
Right. And again, and these numbers again. If I put all these numbers together, and these are really solid numbers. That's how I get myself up until the Common Era. And once I'm in the Common Era, I just started counting, meaning that we've been counting. The amount of counting we have to rely on is less than the secular counting, right? Because they started in the year 01, whatever it was in the Common Era, right? So that's basically how you build your Jewish calendar. Fox News Network was so confused about this, right? They were just totally off on this. They couldn't get it down. But these are basics, right? There's not a lot to talk about here. There are only a few numbers that you need to put together, and all of a sudden you're going to end up in the year 5782, right? It's not impossible to explain to someone simply why we believe that this is the number, right? The only number I haven't showed you yet is the number 70 for the, and that's an important one, and that seems to be alluded to very strongly in several primary sources in the Navi itself or the Ksuvim. Looking at Yirmiyah HaNavi in number 4, V'haysa kol ha'aretz hazos l'charvo l'shama v'abdu ha'goyim ha'ele as melech bavol shivim shana. You will be destroyed and you will be under the control of Bavel for 70 years. V'haya kimlo shivim shana efkod al melech Bavel v'al ha'goy at the end of 70 years, Pavel's going to get wiped out. Similarly, four chapters later, now, unlike in source number 4, where we say that Pavel's going to get destroyed after 70 years, in source number 5, same book, 4 chapters later, right? It's not just a matter that Bavel will be destroyed. Okay, great. Now we're under whoever destroyed Bavel. But in fact, no, at the end of 70 years, we will go back to Israel, meaning that the exile will be 70 years, as indicated by Yirmiyah. Similarly, Daniel says, Shavuim shivim nechtach aramecha al ir kodshecha v'chalei ha'peshel v'hasim chatos chaper oman l'hovi tzedek olamim v'rachtom chazon v'naviv l'mshok kodesh kadoshim. Says that there will be basically 70 years where we will be in fact punished for all what we did wrong, and then we will be able to return. So I've got my calendar down, easy peasy, no problem. I can put Ezra exactly where he needs to be, right? According to my understanding right now, I could give you the years, assuming that the first Beis HaMikdash was destroyed in the year 3338, and then meaning our years. The chart at the end goes in secular numbers. It gives you the BCEs, right? But it's an easy conversion from one to the other, right? So assuming that we are dealing with that, right? I can tell you that Ezra's has got to be, right, in the year, the beginning of the 35th century, according to the Jewish calendar, because he's coming at the time and he's going to be leading the rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash, right? So this is all...
So roughly 3408.
Right, yeah. Right, right. That's
maybe
a possibility.
He came a year or two later.
Right, we're going to see exactly what he came. Right, correct. I mean, this is all very important because as you say, we're going to be interpreting verses. We're going to have a little bit of a trouble here, there, but I need to be grounded in what are my initial numbers I'm working off of. Right, so right? So this doesn't seem to be so hard.
Now, as I understand, his return is, in secular terms, 576 BCE.
Right, so we're going to go through the numbers because it's going to get dicey, right? Right now, yes, there are a lot of numbers that we're juggling, but they're not hard numbers, right? These are numbers that you probably were familiar with before you walked in this evening. Now, as we had mentioned earlier, first Beis HaMikdash is destroyed by Nebuchadnezzar, and Nebuchadnezzar, Bavel is not going to last, but Bavel is going to be, so just if you want to go back a little, at one point Ashur, the Assyrian Empire, was the world power, right? That's Sancheriv. He attacked Israel. He was Assyrian. He, in fact, was the one who exiled the 10 tribes. He attacked Chizkiah. He almost took over the rest of Israel as well, and destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. Miraculously, we were saved.
By a disease.
Right, okay. Then, afterwards, Bavel takes over for Ashur. Nebuchadnezzar actually is successful. But then he, in fact, Bavel falls to Parasu Madai, the Persians and the Medes. Right, and therefore, that's why when we get to a story that we're familiar with at this time in history, the story of Purim, right? Chel Parasu Madai, right? That's what we're dealing with. We're dealing with the Persians and the Medes. That's where, yes.
So, Bavel,
excellent question. The next source.
So, again,
good, I planted her there.
Question, does that mean if?
So at some point in these 70 years, right, we have a 70-year exile, and at some point in the 70 years exile, we're going to shift from being the exile of Bavel to the exile of the Parasu Madai. The Persians will call them, but again, it's the Persians and the Medes. Right, and Purim is already at that point because Ahasuerus, who's running the show, is not Babylonian. He's Persian. He's Peshan. So the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, in number 7, says Tani Rabbi Yosi Barabbi Malchus Paras Bifnei Habayis Shloshim Va'arba Shana Malchus Yavin Bifnei Habayis Mea Ushmonim Shana Malchus Chashmonoi Bifnei Habayis Mea Vishalosh Malchus Beis Hurdus Mea Vishalosh. So right now we're going to go through the history of who in fact was controlling Israel during the time of the Second Temple. So he says the Persians had 34 years. Right? Let's add them as we go. The Greeks took over for 180. What are we up to, Jeff?
214.
The Hasmoneans took over for 103.
Okay, so 317.
And then the house of Herod took over for another 103.
So
420, right on the nose, right? Our numbers work out here. So we understand here that the Persians were in charge for 34 years. The Persians lasted, and we will have to see afterwards when they took over, but the Persian control allowed for the rebuilding of the Second Temple, and then it continued for 34 years after.
For these numbers to be accurate, you look at Zechariah and so on, and you have to say that like the first 23 years or so of those 34 years, they were actually building the Second Temple. It wasn't complete.
Right, again, okay, that's the book of Ezra, right? That's right. We're gonna as I said, this is all the introduction. This is a lot, but this is extremely important.
Yeah, but the 420 years, therefore, is incident.
Well, no, that's not necessarily true. It does not have to mean that. It couldn't, because again, the Persian Empire controlled the first 34 years of the temple. They could have also controlled the 23 beforehand, right?
They could have, but that would mean that you can't add the 420 directly to the 70.
Why not? Why not?
There was a period of building. Because that
But again, we're going to get into this, but Babel did not control through the entire 70 years.
No,
correct?
Of course not.
Right? So again, let's say for the time, let's argument sake. Let's say they controlled the first 35. The Persian controlled the next 35 plus the 34 afterwards. Mm-hmm. Right? So why couldn't they have been building for the last 23 of the first 35?
Because they didn't come until 70 years was up.
Well, again, we're going to have... Let's hold off on that, okay? But these are the numbers we're dealing with and the assumption. And so again, according to this, there is only 34 years where the Persians are in control. Daniel in the pasuk says, "Vata emes agilocha, hine ot shalosh malachim omdim al paras veharavi yashir osher gadol mikol kecheskaso vaosho yair hakol es malchus yavan." So Daniel gives a nevuah, and he said there will only be three more kings of Persia, and the fourth one's going to be fabulously wealthy. That's what Daniel says. We're not, again, it was down to Daniel versus Ezra. That's what Daniel says. Rashi explains, "Hine od shalosh malachim razal amru b'seder olam ze korach achashverosh v'daryavash shebana habayis." There were three kings of Persia up until the time that the Beis HaMikdash was built. And they were Koresh, who we call Cyrus, Ahasuerus, who we call something else, right? And Daryavish, Darius, who actually allowed them to build the Beis HaMikdash. Matan Revi Lemadai. What does it mean he's the fourth? Well, the fourth means, remember, we said this is the Medes and the Persians ruled together. The first king was a Mede king. Then there were three Persian kings. So the one who's the third of the Persians is actually overall the fourth because there was a Mede to start it. Avo b'sefer Yosef ben Gurion, kashuv shehayelo ben lekorash shemolach tachtov lefnei molach achashev shmo bambisha. That there is another opinion that really there wasn't three, but there was actually four. And the fourth one we'll see is who we call Cambyses.
Is there another name? I don't know that name.
That's what he's known as. That's what his friends call him. Now, this is all based on a book called the Seder Olam. The Seder Olam is a chronology of the biblical times. It is attributed to being written at the time of the Mishnah. And if you look at it's not all of it is. So the
isn't that much earlier
than.
Then the time of these things
take
no,
place.
No,
no,
the Mishnah is Roman times already.
So the Seder Olam says, "Ani b'shnas echazu d'Dar Yavish hamadi amdir machzik moezlo va'ata emes agido chahine ad shosh mochem omdim lepras ze korosh v'achashverish v'Dar Yavish shibara sabayis matamud lomar varvi vi lemadai." So in fact, if we look at the Seder Olam, it's exactly what Rashi said. So again, we have everything is down, everything's neat, everything's hunky-dory. When you look at the chart at the end and it says S-O chronology, the S-O means? Seder Olam. Correct.
Oh.
Right? That's what it means. The problem is that secular history totally disagrees with this in a very major way. There aren't three kings, there aren't four kings of Persia, but there's a whole bunch. I give you here from Oxford University Press, Dynasties of the World, the Rules of Ancient Persians, the Achaemenid Dynasty. I have Cyrus, as they said, Koresh, Cambyses, right? According to the second opinion, there was a Cambyses, right? And then there should be an Ahasuerus and a Darius. But I now have a Smerdis. I have Darius the Great. I have Xerxes. I have etc., etc. I keep on going. What?
Did they not have an Ahasuerus at all?
We believe likely that Ahasuerus is Xerxes.
We believe. Which right. One of the things?
Right. Again, I think it's that's at this kind point.
Of one-to-one correspondent. It's like, my name is Judah. Right. My name is Jeff.
Right.
But they don't necessarily mean the same thing.
Right. But I mean, there are good reasons to. If you remember, we had a speaker here a few years ago, Rabbi Yehuda Landi. He had a book on Yirmiyah. Yeah. And in it, he has another book on Purim, where he explains, he puts a very nice piece together explaining why we have every reason to believe that Xerxes was Ahasuerus.
Right.
So, but look here. Eight, we have a really lot of kings. But besides that, let's look at the years. Right? We had that the Persian Empire was barely 70 years. And now we have it coming from the year 559 BCE to the year 330 BCE. That's around 230 years. Right? Now, that's a problem. Because if this is all the truth, then something's got to give, right? There's got to be some flexibility. Either the exile was longer than we expected, or if not that, the Persians controlled a lot longer into the Second Temple period, and that would push everything else off as well.
Why can't we say that this was the time of the Persians?
Because they were destroyed by guy named
Right. So it's very hard to say that. It seems very clear from at least the historical books believe that the Seder Olam is off.
Well, this is it. This is why the book Jewish History and Conflict was in fact written, and it's actually the last in a whole series of books. Jack Greenwald, Zikrono Livracha, his father was a great believer that secular history was wrong and wrote a book about it.
Right, correct. Correct. Well, Jack Greenwald's father predated, this book by a long time. So again, I'd like to discuss, because this is very important, because if we're going to be moving around, so in that now let's look at the chart, and you see that all of a sudden, right, we have... So on the left side, we have the Seder Olam, that which we've been discussing, the traditional Jewish calendar. On the right side, you have the conventional chronology. By conventional chronology, we mean the scientific chronology. Now, everybody agrees that the destruction of the Second Temple was in the year 70. However, for example, the destruction of the first temple, if you look at the, according to our numbers, right, that would be in the year 421 BCE. Right? If you go to the conventional chronology, which is going to have a much longer Persian Empire, right, that means the second temple existed much longer, or at least the exile plus the second temple was much longer, which means the destruction of the first temple had to be much earlier.
Which is the
586.
Although I was remembering Tanya Hader, 576.
Right, okay, but either way, they're both way off from the traditional Jewish view.
Yeah, well, here's the problem, and it's brought out in this book.
Right, I'm familiar.
Is that this chronology does not only agree with all the other chronologies, it agrees with the chronology in Dibrei HaYamim, which is an interesting point.
So again, it's a yes and no. This is, as we'll see, it's far from an easy question. So we've got a problem here, because according to this, we're going to run into the trying to date, for example, the destruction of the first temple, right? Which is something, it's going to be way off, right? Right. If everybody will tell you, it's so interesting because, yes, you're right. In Cheder, in schools, they follow history books. They don't think twice about it. They say the year I was grew up with the year 586, but that totally does not work out. Right. With the simple numbers that we did here to start this class.
Right.
So the bar on the right and on the left is the bar the Persian period? That bar is.
If you look on right. There's a little legend.
I see it, but I can't. It doesn't look. It's hard to tell right. On the copy. So
right. So again, that is correct, right? So if you look, it says in that box is Persian period. Okay. And, right, so the major reason that these numbers, you know, there are other minor issues, but the overwhelming major issue is how long did this Persian period last for?
It's like 200 years off.
It's 165 years off, approximately. You know, that's what the number will be. It's something between 162 and 168. You know, there are other issues that will tweak here or there, but this is a big deal because we can't figure out when the real building of the second Beis HaMikdash is happening, etc., until we try to figure out what's going on with this Persian period. Who are these Persian? Who's the Persian king who gives permission? Who's the Persian king who retracts permission? Who's the Persian king who gives permission again? What years did this happen in? How does this fit into the Pesukim that say there's a 70-year exile? How does it fit into the Gemara, which says that there's only three Persian kings when there seems to be many more Persian kings? How does any of this work out? This is not a new question. By any stretch of the imagination, right, the earliest source that I know about this is Rav Sajagon.
Yeah.
That goes back a bit, yes.
So I just, again, I want to make sure I'm understanding. On the left side, which is what we're calling ESO, it says that the destruction of the first temple is 421.
Correct.
Nebuchadnezzar.
Right.
Is that the number we go by on
well,
the calendar?
So yeah, it's very simple to figure out that number. You subtract a 70 and you subtract a 420. Mm. Right? So 70 minus 70 is zero. Right, you subtract the 420, you're at 420 BC. That's basically what it comes down to, right? It's 421 because there was no year zero.
Got it.
Right? That's why you're off by one in particular. But again, according to us, that's easy peasy. That's going to be 420. But according to them, you need a lot more to be happening between the building of destruction of the first temple and the destruction of the second temple.
Again, the numbers are just fuzzy. So I want to the temple on the left side says 831. Is that the correct number? Am I reading that correctly?
Yes.
867 is
correct. Correct. 831, and that's going to be it's going to be destroyed 410 years later. Right.
867 is doubled.
Well, that's actually
the chapter for Jerusalem. Right. But again, we're gonna. Ignore that. We're just going to go with the building and the destruction of the temple, which is what we really care about here. Now, we've got an issue here. We've got a very real issue here because these numbers are off. It's going to affect how we understand Pesukim. And we'll see, ultimately, it's going to affect what year we're in.
That's right. Where we live.
Right? Correct. Right, that's going to be a biggie, right? This isn't just, you know, some interesting historical issue, right? Because we all agree what year it was. Right? We all agree that the temple was built in the year we said 2928, right? Right. So and it was destroyed in the year 3338. So again, was the year 3338 also the year 421? BC, or was that year the year 586 BC? And depending on that, are you adding, you know, 2022 plus 421 to it? Or are you adding 2022 plus 586 to it to get to the year we're in right now? But that's what it comes down to.
Right.
So again, it's obviously important for Sefer Ezra. It's important for Jewish history.
It's important for our claims to the land of Israel because it lets us date certain things accurately.
Yeah, it's important.
There are lots of implications.
Right. Archaeology, when you're going to do, you know, you're going to find the destruction of Jericho, mm-hmm. right? And you're going to go and you're going to do carbon dating on it. When is it supposed to be happening? Mm-hmm. Right? This is a matter of centuries are off here. Right? Right? Whether it's Yoshua, everything gets pushed because of this. Right? So this is an extremely important question. So this issue already came up in the time, at least the earliest source I saw it was Rav Sadia Gaon. Rav Sadia Gaon lived well over 1,000 years ago. And Rav Sadia Gaon was working off of the Greek historians. Right? And therefore, according to the Greek historians, there was a problem. So Rav Sadia says, the Shibud Babel Yeshlo Shnei Zmanim, Ha'echa Mehem Chamishim V'Shnayim Shana, V'hu Amul Ki Lefi Melos Babel Shivim Shana Efkod Eschem, V'asheni Shivim Shana Amul Amos Chor B'Shushayim Shivim Shana Yeshlo Tchilas Malchus Babel, V'in Chor B'Shushayim Shmona Esrei Shana. So he says, there's two different 70s, remember, that we discussed? There's 70 years that Babel will rule, and then there's 70 years that the temple will be destroyed. Those are not the same 70s. Because Babel started to rule before the day that they destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. Right? So he's explaining that obviously the amount of time that Babel ruled prior to the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash is going to be the same amount of time that Paras, that Persia is going to rule prior to the building of the second Beis HaMikdash. Right? These are two different 70s.
What
reference are you on? I'm on number 12. So he says that he thinks that it's a matter of 8 years. Kamu b'chodesh ha'chamishi b'shivet shivet ha'chodesh, and he goes through here the math, etc., and he explains everything as we do it traditionally. Right. So he says that. So he goes, and we're going to probably go back and discuss this when we do Ezra. He said, "Achnash tartin." Right, so he explains why people were having trouble counting their 70s, what are you starting on, etc. Then in number 13, after he goes through his view of the traditional calculations, he says, there are people out there who are arguing that, no, you have to add years. And they said that in fact that the Persians control Israel for nearly 300 years prior to the Greeks taking over. Can you imagine that? What's that based on? This.
The way they're dating, right?
Right?
And
that they say there are 17 kings, not 3 or 4. He said this cannot be true because it's against the pasuk in Daniel. We saw the verse. Daniel said there are 3, maybe there are 4, right? Depending how we understand it. But there can't be 17. So Rabbi Asadra just out rejects the idea of the secular historians.
But I thought we were saying that was the scientific,
What? Well, again, science in the year 800-900 that we're talking about, whatever. This is what they say. Mazel tov. Right? What greater value is there for what the Greek historians say to what our historians say? Right? At the time, you didn't really have that much to go on. So he says, they say this, we have the Torah, we follow the Torah, there's nothing to talk about. Similarly, the Abarbanel, a few centuries later, deals with the same issue. So he's more on to what we have. There are 14 kings, they said, of Persia. He said that they have the people who write Latin have these different years. Barkosulov Nikolo Shazesh Sheker Shayhudim Osim Shinosem Rashamish Rashamish Rovano. Okirfi Daitim Malchus Pras Vishnos Machem Hoymachurbin Baisvishan Achashverosh Resh Chof Shana. And not only that, they said from the time of the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash until the story of Purim was 220 years, according to the historians of the Abarbanel's time. The Nikol Mafarish Amashah Shavuim Shivim Shizchil May Estrim Shonel Melach Achatash Achatashta V'nishmu David Shonim Achrei Mos Yeshu. And he goes, and when he puts in all of his math, it ends up that the idea that there's going to be a great salvation, according to the Christian historians, falls out pretty much exactly in the year of the birth of Christ.
Well, that's neat.
Except they're off by his dating by four.
Right. You know.
Wait a minute. By 4 years?
4 years. That's what he's saying. So basically, the Abarbanel rejects this right out. He says, obviously, the Christians are making up things in order to for their purposes.
Line it up.
Right? Oh, magically, they come up with numbers that line everything up. There's no reason for this whatsoever. And therefore, he says, you know, this means absolutely nothing to us. We keep our traditional chronology. We reject their chronology. That's that.
Excuse me. So yes. You're talking to the CNN guy. Did any of this play in?
Fox
guy.
Big difference.
You're right. I just
no. Like, this did not play in at all. This was.
I just want to know how you ended up with like 57.6.
No,
right.
This right. Feels like minutia for him.
Right. This guy was nowhere near this. This remained the story that all traditional sources rejected the Greek historians and said that, in fact, that this is something that we cannot accept. And, you know, there's no reason why they should be accepting it. Until there was an Italian who wrote a sefer.
Jewish,
a rabbi. And he went, and his name was Rav Azaria Min HaAdumim, or Rav Azaria De Rossi.
Is this 15?
What? This is, it's being quoted in number 15, and you'll see why. It's actually an interesting one, why we're going with a secondary source here. The Roman wrote here, Emes Nederes, Odio Ne'emona Echuva Lefagi Sefer HaMeschaber Harav. He wrote a book called Ma'or Einayim, The Light of the Eyes. So he's quoting here from a fellow, Elisha Galico. Elisha Galico is a contemporary. They're both living early 16th century. And he says, I read this book, and it's ridiculous.
Which book is it?
The Ma'or Einayim. Mm-hmm. He said, this is what we call Bal Yira, Bal Yimatsa. You should not own such a book. He said, the Rav Yosef Cairo, the same Rav Yosef Cairo who wrote the Shulchan Aruch, presented him with this book. Actually, he gave it to Rav Yosef Cairo. A day later, Rav Yosef Cairo took the book. It says, "Acher Yom, Shach Acher Acher Ayvet Tzivo Sira Sadek Sav Echad Asher Yachtom Bo B'Torach Machav Yeshu Hayishahaya Roy Lesorov Lahavir BeEishas Asefer Nisker B'Chol Mokom." He says, after reading this book in one day, I'd like you to write a letter, which I will sign, that everyone should burn this book.
Wow.
In this book, this fellow, Rav Azaria Min HaAdumim, wrote that, in fact, he believes that secular history is correct. And as since secular history is correct, right, we should accept theirs. But Yosef Cairo did not react well.
That was all
he wrote in the book? No, it's a lot of other stuff in the book that was also. But that's what we're concerned about in the book.
It was clearly called The Light of One's Eyes because it was
enlightening.
Well, not just that, but it's saying, look at evidence.
Mm-hmm. So?
Is this book around?
This book is around. You can get your hands on
it. Burn every copy.
Just wondered if it exists.
Not only that, but in fact, if you go online, let's say in a lot of the traditional Jewish databases, like Otzar Chachma, you can get the book there. That's where I read it. I was able to read it online. I don't own a copy of it. And the reason I don't own it is because they say you're supposed to burn it. That's the same thing. B'chol makom v'shetam al rabbanim v'shem b'kom asher eich hinich ad fisa v'o hushvu v'chova tara v'yikara. So he, so the Chida says, I don't understand. How did they allow him to publish such a book? This book must be destroyed. Write it up and I will sign it. Now,
Rabbi Yossi... Oh, wait a minute, you just said the Chida said that too?
No, the Chida is quoting from this Rav Elisha Galiko. Mm-hmm. Now, he says, Be'yoski, he's just reprinting this. Be'yoski, ani hitmatzri, kach matzti b'davar. He said, I unfortunately dragged my feet on this a little bit. Ubeini beini chola harava gadol, es chola v'asher bo nizvakish b'yeshiva shamala. Ultimately, in the time it took me to write it, Yosef Cairo became ill and died. And he was never able to sign it. He says, I don't have this signed by the Rav Yosef Cairo, but I tell you, this is what he told me to sign. There's one more line added on by the Alshech, Rav Moshe Alshech, who was, again, one of the greats in the time of the... We have his works, of course, on the Chumash, among other things. He writes, Kol dvar me'ero shamati gamani mipi meino rav, no matzoyer Moshe ben Rav Chaim Alshech. So he says, no, the guy's telling the truth. The Rav Yosef Cairo wanted to burn the books. So in fact, there is, according to the Alshech, there is a cherim that the person who wrote this stuff, that book is out. It cannot be considered at all. We'll skip over number 16. Number 16, I just put in a little modern tshuva about how do we deal with this book nowadays. Is it still, are you not allowed to read it? Rav Yaakov Ariel is widely accepted as one of the great poskim of modern Orthodoxy in Israel. He's a great Zionist rabbi. He was one of the finalists to become the Rav Rashi. He was the Rav Rashi of Ramat Gan, and he discusses it. Now, afterwards, the Maharal also wrote on this, and the Maharal followed the traditional approach of the Abarbanel. The Maharal followed the traditional approach of Rav Sadrikon. He said, absolutely, positively, we do not accept the counting of the secular historians, and therefore, without any question, we accept our numbers. Now, this was very easy to do for many, many years, because the only proof that they had against us was we have our history, they have the Greek history. And, you know, as the Ber Hagola points out, Greek history isn't necessarily always correct. Right? There are plenty of mistakes related to us, unrelated to us in Greek history. So why in the world would I want to have to reconsider our traditional Gemaras in light of Greek history? Around 150 years ago, the tide turned a little bit because there were great archaeological finds in Persia. All of a sudden, they began to be able to read, they figured out how to read cuneiform. Yeah. And once they could read cuneiform, they started to find these lists of kings that matched the books of the Greeks, which would cause a great problem for us.
Because now they have proof that.
Right, now they have archaeological proof, and the question is, does that change anything?
So is cuneiform, I don't know that this is the first time I've heard this word, is it Persian?
Cuneiform started in Sumeria.
Okay. And is it a code?
It's not
it's
a
an
code.
Alphabet.
It is the first form of writing known on Earth. It developed from early pictographs. And I think the earliest book available in it was the Epic of Gilgamesh. And it goes...
Right. We only figured out how to decipher cuneiform maybe 150 years ago.
Well, it was after the Rosetta Stone and after Egyptian hieroglyphs.
Right.
So it was the start of both Sumerology and Babylonology. And
right, so...
But it sounds like an alphabet as opposed to...
It's not an alphabet.
Ah.
It's not an alphabet either.
It's not
like hieroglyphics. No. It's not like.
The cuneiform actually, each sign corresponds to a word. It is not a hieroglyph because it is more developed than that.
So yes and no, but when you spell out names, though,
yeah.
It is
names are different.
Yeah. Right, that's what I'm saying. You don't.
But that's a different story.
So anyhow, so with that, all of a sudden, traditional Jewish sources become more open to the idea. We look at the Malbim in Ezra. The Malbim in Ezra kind of says, "I'm not sure." But that's Rashi, because he says, according to the opinion of Rashi, who dayavish and nisko gemayro v'hoya aliyas Ezra shana achar abinyan, ulidasa raza haya melech acher shemelech acher dayavish. According to the opinion of Rashi, this is Darius. According to the other opinions out there, there's a different king out here now. Ezra's man Rava Charzer. So now they're trying to figure out when Ezra came. This is a whole different ball game. So he says, "V'yesh b'zeh deos rabos." There are different opinions. "V'i efshar la'achria," and I can't say who is right. So you're beginning to get here the earliest ideas, we're not as convinced as we once were that this is dead wrong. Right? Nobody's really coming out and saying it's right.
Well, we keep saying our numbers are right.
Right.
Our numbers are right.
Right. So all of a sudden now, the Malbim is saying...
I get that, but right. Now there's new evidence.
Correct. And the Malbim who lived late 19th, early 20th century... Right, turns around and says, "You know what? I really can't.
I don't know.
Make a decision here." The most famous piece written on this was by Rav Shimon Schwab. Rav Shimon Schwab was someone that people should be familiar with.
He's like the grandfather of Rabbi Schwab from the West Side.
Correct.
I was going to say, didn't know him.
So he wrote a piece in a volume that they had came out in honor of the Jubilee of Rav Breuer. And in it, he wrote something called Comparative Jewish Chronology. This came out in 1962. And in it, he basically comes out and says, "I think the secular chronology is right." Ah. And he writes, "In the course of our inquiry, we do indeed find a divine command." So he said, the question is, well, why? Why is it that if this the actual numbers are different than the simple reading, right? We're going to have to now stretch a little bit to make all these numbers work. So he thinks that, in fact, it's meant to be. The question is why? So he says that there is a concept out there, and this is something that we see throughout Tanakh, is that no numbers are ever really all that clear. Right? How many years were we in Egypt for? Right. Those are all correct answers. Right? One place it says 430, one place it says 400, one place it says 210. Why? Well, why? Why can't we just give us a straight number? Right. Why do we have to try to figure out? Well, that really, when Avram says, when Avram hears from God that you're going to be a stranger in a land that's not yours, right? Why? It's not obvious at all that we should start counting from the time that Yitzhak is born. So again, we want. So there is a pasuk in Daniel. Right. So again, the pasuk in Daniel indicates that whenever it comes to at least redemptions, that number is hidden. You shouldn't be sitting there and saying, okay, I got another 2 weeks and God is getting us the heck out of here, right? Therefore, the time of Mitzrayim was not clear at all. The 70 years in exile was not clear at all. And of course, when is the Mashiach, when is our redemption coming, also is very not clear at all. And it's meant to be that way. So again, this is the middle of the article. This is part number 16. In the course of our inquiry, we do indeed find a divine command conveyed by an angel to Daniel to seal the word and close the book at the end of a long prophecy, which begins in chapter 11:1 and ends in chapter 12:4 in Sefer Daniel. This strange vision predicting historical events includes a stern warning. Ata Daniel stoma devarim chasoma sefer ad esa ketz. He's told, Daniel, seal it. Keep it quiet until it's time.
Who's saying that?
God. It's an angel, actually. In the writing of his divinely inspired book, Daniel obeyed this heavenly command, which explains the dark and obscure language of Sefer Daniel. Daniel's very hard to read because he was commanded, don't make it easy. People figure this out. It also gives a perfect right to assume that certain historical events revealed by Daniel were omitted by him on purpose in faithful obedience to the divine commandment. It's equally safe to assume that our sages, who obviously had a thorough knowledge of the entire history of the Second Commonwealth, correspondingly illuminated in all conversations the pertinent discussion in the same period which Daniel had to close and seal up. If Daniel had to keep quiet what exactly was happening in the time when we were in the first exile in Babel, so if Daniel wasn't going to tell us, there's no way that the Gemara was going to tell us. Is it not too presumptuous to think that the secret book contained the records of all generations and incidents during the missing years, which had to be supposed in deference to Daniel's strict instruction? So is it that strange, he says, to assume that, in fact, yeah, we've been living in this idea of partial knowledge for many, many years, because that was the instruction and how it was supposed to be given up. Number 17, he said, now, we are now faced with two questions. A, suppose such a holy conspiracy has been divinely commanded, what would have been its reason? And B, why would we today be allowed to rend apart the veil of obscurity? Right? Why all of a sudden now do we say, well, here's the story. They're missing years and now we can put them back. What gives us, if Daniel couldn't tell us the secret and the Gemara can't tell us the secret, why can we tell the secret?
After you get the shrine, you can say, okay, 430. Who's back though? It's all different.
Well, no, because this all affects, you know, the third base on Mikdash also.
But it's still
going to
tell us what it's going to be.
No.
That's the point.
Right. So again, we know, well, what do we know? What do we know about the third base on Mikdash? Okay, what year are we in now? What if we're missing 168 years? What year are we in now?
5950. Oh. Because he was rewriting in 62.
So it's only 50 years?
Maximum.
So then
do we say there is a better prophecy? So let's see what he says. Again, that's a big deal.
That is a big deal. Is it possible it's 160 years?
No.
Earlier?
No.
No.
Okay. I just wanted to...
No, not at all. Okay. Do the math. It cannot be. So he says as follows. In Sanhedrin 97b, we find a stern condemnation of all those who conjecture the messianic dates from the last chapter of Daniel. Right? The Gemara says very clearly, you can't try to figure out the ultimate day. These mysteries are to remain stumim v'chasumim ad esa ketz, closed and sealed till the end, till the time of the end. Had it not been for the fact that important parts of the prophecy had been left out or purposely obscured, the clues of the messianic date finding might have yielded desired results. God was able to keep it irritated by leaving out. We still cannot have the audacity to unveil a mystery which was so carefully hidden by our forebears, unless the mystery had become unveiled all by itself. This has occurred not through our own doing, but through the archaeological discoveries made during the last century and a half. The earth has indeed opened its mouth and yielded countless bits of material in the form of decoded and readable clay tablets, inscriptions on rocks and temple ruins, and other scripts pertaining to the Babylonian-Persian era. This host of historic information has become common knowledge. There's nothing less for us to uncover. If you have means that Schwab suggests is that yes, there were missing years. Yes, they were purposely hidden. God decided it's time for us to find out about it. That's why these archaeological findings were found. This was an unbelievable statement that Rav Schwab, who was clearly somebody who
is extreme traditionalist,
is accepting that which was rejected for many, many years.
Centuries.
Right. Now, with that in mind.
And there was a Davidic outcry when he wrote this?
Of course there was. Therefore, in 1990, when the book, which we have in our library, you can take it out, Selected Speeches, came out, they republished it with this, but with an epilogue. And the epilogue I give you here writes as follows. All the aforegoing is based on an essay which was printed about 30 years ago. That's a typo. Right? And which was revised a few times. The purpose of this attempt was to assist the bewildered Torah true students of Jewish history. Sitting on the horns of a dilemma, and to strengthen their emunah, time and again I was urged to publish this revised edition in order to serve a larger readership. But in the meantime, many great doubts have bothered my mind, and I have made it mandatory for me to share my pangs of conscience with my readers. We are now counting the year 5751. If we add 168 years, the real day of the year will be 5919, which leaves only 81 years until the end of the sixth millennium. This is most frightening, especially for all of those born not so long ago, those to be born in the near future, who would become the living witness of the end of days. They will see in their own eyes whether the statement that the world will only exist 6,000 years and then be destroyed is meant to be taken literally or has a different interpretation as many Haggadic pronouncements. I'm writing all this with awe and trepidation. On the other hand, if the hidden years never were, then mankind still has 250 years before the coming of the end. It is because of all these gnawing doubts I have decided to put a big question mark after the words Jewish chronology. He switched the name of it from Jewish chronology to Jewish chronology with a question mark. Let someone with greater knowledge come and pick up the threads where I left off. Our traditional, universally accepted Jewish way of counting the years, Lebrius Olam, is sacred territory and only fools do not fear to tread upon. This may be a disappointment to some, but on the other hand, I must have the courage to belong to those who wish to be honest to themselves than to be right. I would rather have a good question open than risk giving a wrong answer. So Rav Schwab very much walked this back. So it's a very, very interesting question.
But he's talking about, instead of being right, meaning correct, he's talking about to be honest. He means by being honest, agreeing with Seder Olam HaRabbah.
But he doesn't say that. Whoa. He doesn't say
it's what it means.
It's going to be right.
It's a clear
implication. No, he doesn't back away from his answer as much as he said, I'm leaving it as a possibility and leaving it open. I'm not saying
it's very fascinating. It's, you know, I've spoken to let's take an example of someone like Rav Beryl Wein, right, who is a very traditional Jewish historian nowadays. And if when asked, or when writing in his books, he basically says, I don't know. Right? That's the standard. I spoke to Rabbi Landi. Unfortunately, he's ill these days. He has non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. He's going through treatment. Everyone should have him in mind. But I asked him, I said, bottom line, come on. I've read your stuff. You have so many caveats for everything you say. What do you really think? He said, I think I'm not smarter than the Malbim. The Malbim says, I can't figure it out. He said, you can't expect me to figure it out either.
Is it possible? I mean,
now, I don't know why it bothers Rav Schwab so much that this might be the year 5950.
Because then, why would...
Why does that bother him?
Because if we're not supposed to know when redemption is coming, because then we'll be sitting there for 2 weeks left, then we definitely don't want to know right before it happens.
50 years isn't right before. 50 years is a long time to leave the milk outside the fridge.
What it means is that he talks about the people who are born now will be the witnesses for the entertainment. No, there's going to be witnesses.
Right. So what's a, why now versus?
But it's much sooner than we.
Okay.
Well, I'm not.
It's going to be a great time.
Meaning that, yeah, but it's kind of, why does it bother him so much more? That's going to be sooner rather than later.
We want it to happen. I'm not to, you know, the, it's actually a myth that the, there's a Chinese proverb, may you live in interesting times. Mm-hmm. But it's still a true statement. Mm-hmm. It's a curse because interesting times are always trying times. And in fact,
don't get me wrong, but I would love for the chef to come right now and for me to be here, you know?
But if it's going to be a long process with a lot of disease and a lot of war and a lot of starvation, it's not so good necessarily to live. It might be better to be in the
brain. But, you know, but it either is or it isn't. Either it is or it isn't. That's what it comes down to. So again, this is something that we're going to have to deal with going forward. But this is a major issue, an issue that was that, correct. But this is a major issue. Well, we're going to have to work through the book. Well, this in the background. But
read carefully what he said about Daniel. Mm-hmm. There's a holy conspiracy going on between Akash Burke and Daniel.
Right.
And bluntly, there must be large proportions of the book of Daniel or a second book of Daniel or something out there that maybe becomes revealed.
So his idea is,
those kings.
His idea is that, no, it became, God decided now is the time to reveal it. And he revealed it through teaching us cuneiform and digging up these tablets. And that's
which how it's, itself is a centuries long process. But my point is, there has to be a book which Daniel wrote, signed and sealed, and is out there, and we don't have it.
No, I strongly disagree. Because again, because he was told not to write it.
Right.
So why would he have written it if he was told?
And writing is done by the
explains it. No, not at all. All right, we've overshot our time, but
it's very confusing and worrisome.